Hello and welcome to Conversations with the Voice of Reason. I'm your host, Benjamin Boyce, and today's conversant is Laurel Herbert, who is a detransitioner and a older detransitioner at that. He transitioned in his 30s and detransitioned in his 40s, and at the current time is still going through the process of understanding what motivated his obsession with quote-unquote becoming a woman, or a trans woman in this case, and why that was based rather not on a gender identity that he was given at birth, but as a coping mechanism, this gender distress as a coping mechanism for deep-seated childhood trauma. You can find him via the links below. Without further ado, here is Laurel Herbert. You run a few businesses? Are you like an entrepreneur or...
I mean, my wife and I are trying to start up some businesses where we coach couples in relationship and teach them how to handle the feelings and emotions that come up in their relationship, because we've both gone through our own challenges in life that have made us aware of how much all of us live our lives according to the feelings and emotions in our body. So, and on the side, I work for my dad's business right now, compiling reports for law firms and litigated truck bus and forklift accidents. I spent a significant time in my early years running my own trucking business, so I have a lot of background in that. Besides that, I love photography and video production, do some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your relationship to the internet, social media?
I use it a lot. I've got a YouTube channel that I post videos on and an Instagram account that I post a lot of things on. But yeah, I don't have a huge internet presence.
Yeah. Do you want one?
I kind of do, because I want... mostly because of what I went through and the lessons I've learned in this whole thing, and how I've learned how, I guess I've learned a lot that could be really beneficial for a lot of people. And I want my story to be heard so that other people can learn a new perspective.
Yeah.
New perspective that perhaps they hadn't thought about, because I was thrown for a loop through this whole thing.
Where did that thing begin?
I guess back when I was about 4 years old, like is typical for most trans people, is when I first started to notice there was a difference between boys and girls. And I knew there was something wrong about me. It wasn't necessarily that I knew there was something wrong about me, but the way I was raised, I developed this belief clearly that I shouldn't be a boy, or that it wasn't okay to be a boy, and that I should be a girl. And I tend to think that at the time, my mind, not knowing what to do with that as a four-year-old child, turned it into that I clearly must feel like I'm a girl on the inside. My mom was very had a lot of hatred towards men. She would always say things about how disgusting men were, how disgusting penises were. It was always very negative towards men. Every time she'd be talking on the phone to my grandma, she'd be telling her all this stuff about my dad and how horrid of a person he was and how he did this and that. And I'm just this kid growing up in this environment, hearing this all the time, that men are disgusting. Men are monsters. Men are something to be despised. And I guess as I was growing up, my mind kind of took to the idea, well, I guess I can't be a man if I want to get the love and affection from my mother, my own primary caregivers, telling me that if I'm a man or a boy, that I'm not going to be lovable. So my mind, not knowing what to do with that, said, well, apparently I must be a girl trapped in a boy's body. And that's what the narrative continued in my mind. And for the rest of my life, because I felt like that, I honestly believed, I did not know what transgender was. For most of my life, I was raised in the Mormon church in a secluded house.
What decade about? Like, were you?
I was in the church till I was 34. So 34 years, I fully believed in it, thought it was reality. And in the church, I was told that I was created, that if I was told that if I was a boy on this earth, that meant I was created as a boy in the pre-existence. And my poor little mind, that really screwed with me, because I wanted to believe that somehow I would have the opportunity someday to live as a woman. But I was told from birth that I was clearly a boy. I was made a boy before this life. I'm a boy here, and I will be a boy forever. And so my poor mind just could not accept that.
What was the, I mean, you're talking about a perspective when you were very young. So I'm wondering if you have grappled with any insight into the content of your mother's hatred of men. Like, what was it about men, their behavior, their station in life, their nature? Did they just have like a sinful nature or something like that? Like, what was the content of that criticism?
Basically, my perception was that everything about a man was to be hated. Like their demeanor. I guess she literally raised me to believe that men and women were different and that women were better in some way. But at the same time, she despised the feminine herself. Like the instant she would get home from church, the very first thing she would do is take off those feminine clothes and put her pants back on, which was odd because she was so hateful towards men, but then she didn't necessarily embrace the feminine either. She wasn't a very feminine person.
Maybe on some level she thought she was a boy trapped in a girl's body.
I have considered that, especially when I went through my own trans identity situation, and I started thinking back to my mother's behavior and thought perhaps she may be struggling with something similar, but she would never, with her belief in the Mormon Church and believing what she does, she would never even give any room for that.
Okay, yeah. So, what year about was it when you broke up or out of the Mormon Church?
That would have been about, it was 2016. It was
Oh.
same year I got married.
Wow,
And
okay.
same year I came out to my wife as trans.
Okay. What is the sequence of you disentangling yourself from the Mormon worldview, which is a totalizing worldview? It's a 360. It's got everything laid out. You live your entire life there. You could, live generations and generations without ever emerging from it.
Right. That's one of the reasons that I have the very strong perspective I do now about things such as gender identity, because I grew up in this church that laid out for me such a perfect path to exaltation. I was told exactly what I had to do in order to be assured that I would live with God someday in the highest kingdom of glory with my family forever. And because that was everything my reality was built around in 2016, when that went away, when that disintegrated underneath me, it was like everything I had built my entire reality all of a sudden went away just overnight. And I had to completely rebuild who I was. I had to relearn who I was in this world. The world all of a sudden looked like a different place. The people around me meant something different to me because I grew up judging people. I thought that those people who were not a member of my church were sinners, were not good people. And I wouldn't give them, basically wouldn't give people the time of day if they weren't members of my church back then, because I was told they would lead me astray if I listened to what they said.
And on some level, these beliefs persists, and it takes a long time to stop believing or stop those just automatic thoughts. So for a period of time, you are outcast yourself, completely shunned and groundless. I just a month ago or so, I spoke with a counselor in Seattle who specializes with ex-Mormons, speaking with them, and he just spoke about how for very fundamentalist people who are in very fundamentalist totalizing worldviews, once they leave that, they have a tendency to try to find something just as strong, just as powerful. And here's this thing called gender and
Yes.
transgenderism. Is there a
That's
pull there
great.
for that?
Great that you mentioned that because, yes, I had a huge sense of community in the church. That was one of the things I missed the most, was losing that sense of community. And then all of a sudden finding myself basically alone in the world, although I had my amazing wife together with me to hold my hand through it all as I lost my whole identity. But yes, when I discovered that it was possible to transition, and there was this whole new community that welcomed me and loved me for who I was at the time.
Your authentic self, your
Yes.
soul, your true soul.
And here was this church that, because I walked off the path, they disowned me. They said, "Well, you're lost now." My own family basically told me, "This was your heritage and you chose to leave that." And then this other community, "Oh, we love you for your authentic self. Come on, we welcome you." And that felt amazing to have that community. And me and my wife would go to events, queer events, where I could show up as my authentic self, as my woman self, and feel welcomed and loved. And so I think
Yeah.
that did play into that.
Yeah. So there's that connection to a community, and there's the way that you're connecting to that community via belief, but also this aspect of performing femininity. Like what was the content for you of not just being repelled from the male or hiding from the male or using it as a mask, if that would be the case, but what was like the positive? Like you get to finally express this. Like, what is the content of being a woman or a trans woman?
For me, it felt absolutely euphoric. Like it was an experience that I lived my whole life wishing I could have. I lived in such envy constantly of the women and girls I saw, that I'd see them in their pretty dresses. And for some reason, that was so appealing to me, to get to feel that feeling of wearing those beautiful, soft, flowy clothes that the girls did. And I think my mind also calculated that if I was a girl, that I would get more love and attention, obviously growing up the way I did, that being a man was not acceptable. So yeah, when I embraced that feminine aspect of me, there was parts of me that just felt absolutely amazingly euphoric, like we've arrived, we finally achieved what we've always wanted.
Wow. And there's also a creative aspect of that. You get to reinvent yourself, or invent yourself. You get to choose a name. You get to work on all these different behaviors and the way you move your hand, the way you move your voice. How did you dive into that aspect, the creation?
Yeah, that brings up a psychological part of it that I found myself questioning myself a lot, that I didn't naturally move more feminine, because there's some trans women that grow up from the time they're a very small child just being feminine. And I felt a need to almost hyper-masculinize myself because I knew I was holding on to this secret that I was a girl inside. So I owned and drove trucks. I used to drive the biggest lifted diesel pickup truck in the whole county because I was everything as man as possible. I had an arsenal of guns. I was everything man because I was constantly trying to run from this feeling that I'm really a girl inside, and somebody's going to find out if I don't make it very clear that I'm just as man as possible.
Oh, wow.
And that was an interesting phase to go through. And so when I discovered that I could transition and I could stop doing all of that, although that's the weird thing too, is because I always maintain an interest in diesel trucks and all these manly things that I learned to love in my early life. Even though I wanted to live as a woman and I felt like I was a woman inside, I felt like I was a woman that was into trucks and guns and all the manly things. But I went through a long period there where I was so afraid that people would detect something feminine about myself that I would not let any femininity out. So for the longest time, I questioned myself, am I really trans then? Does this mean that I'm less trans if I didn't grow up playing with dolls and being feminine? And one thing I've learned about that is everybody has their own unique experience. We're all a fingerprint based on every little experience we had. So the fact that I grew up that way, it's just a evidence of my upbringing, I guess.
You know, there's certain aspects of theology that, by hook or by crook, become little bones that we chew on, you know, like these little riddles about the nature of existence or metaphysical riddles, you know, and they're not really tied to anything practical or anything material. They have like some other content, and these ideas are really infectious because I don't know. I'm hearing you like talk about like just thinking about gender all the time and trying to categorize experience in this way, that gender is so funny because you see it in the world, but like you can't really grab it. It's like in the corner of your eye when a woman, you know, when a woman's acting feminine, it's like she can try to project that, but you know, there's this natural aspect to certain women that are just really feminine, and you can kind of see
Right.
it like as a halo. Men too, you know. So to try to grab onto that, you're spending so much energy. Was that stressful for you, or what?
Absolutely. I used to spend countless hours in my mind trying to sort out what it means to be a boy or a girl, what it means to be a man or a woman. And I would hyper analyze every single person I would see, every woman or girl that would walk down the street. I would watch every little movement, every little thing she would do to try to emulate that, to try to understand
Well,
what
okay.
is the difference. A lot. So that was one thing that was relieved when I transitioned and was living full time as a woman. I felt that this huge relief, a huge weight off my shoulders, that I no longer had to hyper fixate, hyper analyze what
Okay.
women were, because now I got to live as one. Although then I was still trying to make sure I was living up to the expectation of being a female.
Oh no.
Still analyzing them in a way, but not the same.
There's just so much that's queer about this, and just like this, not a queer way in the political sense or in the gay sense, but just like riddles within riddles.
Yeah, and I guess going along with that, trying to figure out what it meant to be a man or a woman for so many years, like typically happens to a lot of those of us who struggle with a lot of trauma, and we recognize we're carrying a lot of trauma from our childhoods, we become interested in the field of psychology. I haven't gone to school for psychology, but I did become very interested in psychology because I wanted to understand what in the world is going on in me. What is this that I'm living with? Why do I feel I was born a boy, but why do I feel so much like I'm a woman? So I started diving into all kinds of different therapy modalities, trying to sort out what is happening in me, what's going on. And when I came across Dr. Richard Schwartz's Internal Family Systems Therapy, IFS, it's parts therapy. I actually decided to do a training myself to become certified in parts work in IFS. And during the training, it was an online training, and the instructor, one of the other students, asked the instructor, "Do you think that that gender identity is a part, as in a part of us that developed over our lifetime as a protector in our system to keep us safe?" And the instructor said, "I personally don't think it's a part, but the creator of IFS, Dr. Richard Schwartz, does absolutely believe it to be a part." And as soon as I heard that, and knowing what IFS was, and knowing as much as I did about psychology, I sat back in my chair and I thought about that. Well, damn, what does that mean? If gender identity is a part, and this psychologist or this Dr. Richard Schwartz has 40 plus years of working with people and truly believes that gender identity is a part, a protective part in our system that was developed over time. And that really sent me on a path of questioning myself and reanalyzing my identity. And
And you were trans at this time.
I was fully believing. I was sitting there taking the training in my female identity, fully confident that I had made the right choice, having gender reassignment surgery, and that all was well. I was happy in my life and content. But sitting there watching that training and hearing that question, it sent me on a spiral of a of trying. It destabilized what I thought I had stabilized in my system. And so it started me on a path over a few weeks of really questioning whether gender identity was something you're born with or not, because I was convinced I was born with it. I honestly believed in every way that I was born this way.
Rather than
And
it
I,
being a reaction to your family circumstances.
right. I,
Okay.
because I didn't see that part, because growing up in it as a child, I just accepted it as my reality. I didn't recognize any trauma. If anybody asked me, I would have said I had a fine childhood. I wasn't traumatized. And a lot of people say that.
What's the, just for, as an aside, what is, in brief, what is internal family systems? You say like a system. It sounds like this, it's really popular, the kids these days. Not only are they messing around with these gender categories and these sexual categories, but they, a certain portion of them cringily are attracted to like a dissociative identity disorder or like some sort of multiple personality disorders. And it's just like this really fun thing where they can just name all their different systems and they get along and they get to have conversations with themselves and stuff like that. So, internal family system sounds like it's similar to that, but it's not as cringy to that.
In fact, Dr. Richard Schwartz says quite often that people confuse it with multiple identity
Personality.
disorder,
Yeah.
personality disorder, because you've, it's basically every one of us, as we're growing up from childhood, we find ourselves in situations that are traumatizing, or we don't even know they're traumatizing, but it's a situation where it was really uncomfortable for us or caused us a lot of distress. And in that moment, there's a part of us that separates from ourself and identifies that, uh-oh, there's this danger in this world that I need to protect the system from. And so this part, it's still us. It's not a separate part of us, but it's a part of our system that took on a job that said, okay, there's this job I have to take to protect myself now from this point on, and I will never let this happen again to the system. And so we end up as adults with all these different protective parts that developed in past experiences and identified ways they needed to protect us. And so it's one that it's not an infallible system. It's not an infallible therapy modality. There are limits to it as well, but it allowed me to make sense more than any other modality I've ever come across. And it's gaining a lot more traction. It's becoming more popular, a lot more well known now. And a lot of
You get to
people
know.
assume when I mention IFS, a lot of people say, oh, that must be some sort of conversion therapy you went through.
Oh,
No,
yeah.
I definitely would not have allowed anybody to come near me with any sort of conversion therapy. I was convinced I was a woman. This is who I am. Stay away from me with your nonsense.
What's the thought process, or what was your thought process with regard to going beyond? Was it you're turning up the dial, so you accept a new name, you swap out your wardrobe, you start to work on your behavior, and then you have these hormones out there, and then you have these surgeries out there. Was there like a gradual, like, oh, I have to do this next thing? Like, what was your, because trans, it's really like the language around transition is really tricky. They try to make it transgender, but trans means going from one place to another. It's actually a process. It's a process. So, what is that process? How was that process for you?
I Yeah, I found that process kind of fun because it was like, okay, we're making progress here. Initially, I sought out a therapist, a local therapist, because I knew I needed in I live in Colorado, and in Colorado at that time, I needed a letter from a therapist in order to get the hormones. And so I searched the internet, found a gender identity specializing therapist, which turned out to be, I thought that was great because here's a therapist that identifies as trans as themselves or non-binary. And this is a person that's going to write me a letter without much resistance. And that played into the whole thing because the psychologist that wrote me the letter for surgery was also trans. And so that's a part of my whole story here is that there's no gatekeeping when the gatekeepers have no reason to gatekeep. But yeah, in 2017, I began HRT estrogen, and that was euphoric. That was an amazing first step. The first time I popped that first estrogen pill, I felt amazing.
And the blocker as well, or just the
Yes,
estrogen?
testosterone blocker as well. That would give me weird head issues. It caused weird pressure in my brain, so I didn't like taking it, but I did still because I didn't want the testosterone still pumping through my body.
And the estrogen, the feeling, was it like Dorothy landing in Oz?
That's, yeah, basically it just felt like rainbows and butterflies, happiness.
Was there like this little dead boy, like with the feet sticking out of the house you landed in, like your masculinity?
Yes. Yeah. And I didn't ever want to see that boy again.
Really?
I was so done with that identity. I was so ready to fully embrace my female identity and become the woman I thought I was. Yeah. So yeah, in 2017 started those hormones, and I didn't start presenting as female. I was on the hormones for, let's see, it was like July that I got the prescription, and then it wasn't till September, I think, when I started actually presenting as female full time. There were certain places that I had identified that I would go in my female identity, like certain places that were safe where there was queer events going on, and I would show up at the queer events in my female identity. But for the rest of my life here where I live in Colorado Springs, I was still presenting as a man, especially at our daughter's school, because that's always a touchy subject going around kids. And I have varied opinions about that now, about being a trans person around kids and the confusion it causes them. But at the time, I was so into that this is who I am. These kids are just going to have to accept that this is who I am. And I'm sure they'll get used to it. They're kids. Kids are adaptable. And so for a while, I would not present as female when I went to my daughter's school to pick her up because I was afraid of judgment and things. But then around September, after I had been on hormones for a few months, I finally decided I can't continue living this lie, living as a man. I have to live as my female self. So I showed up at the school as my female self and got a couple of funny looks, but for the most part, I was just accepted after that. And that was one thing that kind of blew my mind. I expected that I would get a lot of kickback, but I guess it's the way I presented myself largely because I'm not the kind of person that walks into a room and demands respect or demands attention. I keep to myself. And when people would misgender me, I would never get angry about it. I would get a little hurt by it, but I recognize that everyone has their own perspective. And if someone doesn't want to see me as a woman, I never expected them to properly gender me. Although it did bother me when people wouldn't. But I recognize everybody's where they're at in their own personal space, and I don't feel right about demanding and getting angry about the fact that people aren't properly gendering me. I say that aren't, even though I do not at all embrace that feminine identity anymore. Once I, it was like taking the red pill on the Matrix. Once I understood that my gender identity was built over the course of my lifetime and my childhood, and that I was born a man, I was born male, and there's no reason I can't embrace that male identity. Once I recognized that, there was no going back for me. There was no questioning where else. Well, I might still present as female sometimes. No, I fully embrace my male identity. There's no question about it.
Was the
Other.
what were the similarities between disentangling your mind, your body, your soul from the Mormon framework and disembodying your mind, body, and soul from the gender identity, transgender identity framework? Was there a similar kind of deprogramming process? And do you think that you did it good because you were a studied hand at that?
I think, yes, my having my whole reality ripped out from under me from the Mormon church when I realized that was not what I thought it was, did play into my ability to handle this shift of perspective and gender identity. For one, the Mormon Church absolutely is a cult in every way, shape, and form. And I've heard a lot of people say that the trans community is a cult as well. And I, at first, when I heard people saying that, and me, when I fully was identifying as part of the trans community, I couldn't comprehend how this is possible. How are people calling this a cult? What about it is a cult? But when you think about it, a community that establish itself to welcome you in only as long as you follow the expectations and rules of the organization, the community, the cult, then you're welcome. As soon as you step off line, you're no longer welcome. Get out. I've been receiving hatred from the trans community. They tell me that my perspective and my opinion and the book I wrote is going to cause harm to trans people because those who don't understand what being trans is are going to take my words and turn them into weapons and fire against the trans community. I could see that possibility, but the reality is I'm suffering with a tremendous amount of grief and regret for having gone through what I did, fully believing that I was doing the right thing. And I recognize that there are many other people in the same position. When you establish an identity with yourself, you truly believe that that is, for all intents and purposes, what you should do. It is everything. Like I established the belief that I was a woman in a male body. And because I had that belief, it drove every action I made, beginning hormone therapy and having the surgery. And I believed with everything I was, that having gender reassignment surgery was what was best for me. I honestly thought, I mean, somebody doesn't go through something so drastic as having your penis cut off and turned into a surgically created vagina unless you have a really good reason to believe that is the right thing to do. And I fully believed with everything I was that that was the right thing to do. And it's because I recognize this psychological pattern in people and tendency for people to grasp onto something and not be able to let go of it. I recognize that my words could potentially help someone who identifies as trans to second guess having the surgery, to maybe think twice about it. Recognize that even though they think with everything they are right now that they want it, that can change. It absolutely can change.
What's the I'm always I feel like a kind of a broken record, or like I'm going through a pattern with this, but like what's the content of wanting to get rid of your genitals and to assume the I mean there's two things. It's like one is gaining a simulacra of the female, but there's also one is destroying and separating oneself from the male. Like that's a really potent stuff. speaking psychologically, right? For you, like tangling that, you had this identity and this ideology that's making this value judgment or assisting you with making this value judgment, but there's still a lot more content than just what that ideology is telling you.
My mind has always been a very complex place, and you asked me earlier, I guess, what I identified the difference between men and women, and when once I identified that women had vaginas, men had penises, and that that was the physical attribute that makes you identifiable as a woman. Even though the whole rest of the body might be masculine, my body, I had testosterone pumping through my body for 36 years. And so it did what it was going to do to me. It made me a man like it was supposed to. It made my body have the physical characteristics. But the genitals specifically, somehow my mind was able to tell myself that if I had the right genitals, regardless of everything else, regardless of my face looking like a man, as long as I have that part on my body, then we'll be okay. We can survive. I don't have to pass.
Yeah. What I've seen with transition is that the target just keeps moving. Did the target keep moving for you? Like, oh, if I had tits, then this would be, if I had this vagina, this would be, okay, if I had a different like facial structure, and if I had different clavicles, like there's just all these procedures and they stack up. And like, what is trans? Like, what, there's no content there. There's no, like, there's nothing to shoot at, right? So like, it just goes from one to the next. Is that true for you?
That is true for me, not as much as I've seen it happen to others,
Okay.
because I didn't want to become this constant
Project.
surgical project. Yeah, because a lot of trans people, I watch them as they go for bottom surgery, then they get breast implants, and then their face doesn't look good enough to them. So then they get facial feminization surgery,
The
and it's just
voice, too.
always, yeah, then the voice vocal surgery, and that was one I considered until I looked into the, I'm so glad I did not do that, especially now knowing what I know. But yeah, there's just surgery after surgery, and it's like as a trans person in this community, you're expected to check each of these boxes in order to keep up with the expectation of being truly, fully trans. And I had my gallbladder out in my 20s. I had weight loss surgery. I then had my gender reassignment surgery. So I'm no beginner to having surgeries to my body. But at the same time, I did not want to play this game of constantly trying to keep up with the expectations. So once I had
Yeah.
the bottom surgery, gender reassignment surgery, and had been on hormones for a while, I was content. I was mostly just living my life. I would look at myself in the mirror and actually be pleased with how I looked. I was okay with how I looked, and I wasn't constantly trying to chase after that part, because the genitalia was huge for me. Once I had the genitalia part sorted out, then I felt mostly content.
So you spoke about when you left the church, there was a community aspect that you had to swap out or find a place for you to have community that you lost. But to what degree did losing your religion, losing your metaphysic, losing that which is God, which is the ground of being, or that your master orientation, to what degree did you lose that and find that somewhere else?
I went full-blown atheist for a while because being fed this very specific idea of what God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Ghost looks like. I mean, in the Mormon church, they even have images of these paintings of what God and Jesus look like as they appeared to Joseph Smith. And that's what was in my mind for my whole life. So every time I would pray, that's who I was praying to, was this image of God. And once that went away, and I realized that the Mormon church was not what I always thought it was, and all of a sudden I thought, well, if that's not true, if that's not what God is, and I've been living my whole life hearing all these other ideas of what God is, what religion is, none of it can be true. I lived in a world where if the Mormon church was not the true church, there could not be a true church. There could not be any truth to religion or God. And full-blown atheism for a long time. And then through my wife and I, all our self-help stuff, we started into meditation, and pretty soon I started to discover a spirituality, a recognition of consciousness, that there is the same consciousness in every single one of us, but we happen to be living separate physical realities. And so I gained a whole new perspective of what God was, who God was, what spirituality was, and now I do not believe in any one religion. I do not believe that God has a physical form. I've taken on more of a that God is within us all. We are all connected as one. And it makes a lot more sense to me compared to what I was raised with.
Did that switch in orientation coincide with the detransition, or lead you through the detransition, or comfort you?
That my sister-in-law, one of the very first things she asked when I detransitioned was, "Are you guys fundamentalist Christians now?" Because that does tend to many detransitioners that I see grasp onto a religion. And I guess maybe that happens as a shift from one community to then find community and religion again after leaving the trans community. I'm not entirely sure. But I feel like I, with my wife and our friends, have enough of a community now that I don't necessarily feel a need to grasp onto any other community to find that. We're building our own community. But yeah,
One, sorry.
leaving one's belief system does leave a person very destabilized and needing something else to settle into,
Yeah.
typically.
And it takes a certain amount of maturity to be able to stabilize and to, I mean, tread lightly with the, structures of belief rather than just needing them, just say, okay, that's very useful. Like you were saying with the systems, like IFS, this, you could really believe in that and then start going through and like everything's this. And like every time you interact with anybody, you're like, oh, I could see your system, hey, let me
Yes.
tell you about the system. Have you heard about my Lord and Jesus, the Savior, the system? Like you could do that, but like a more mature thing, it's like, okay, this is a tool set, just the internal family systems. This is a tool set. It's very useful for some, and it's got it, but it does, it's not useful for everything. It takes a certain sort of, maturity and balance in oneself to not over rely on these things as crutches. But
Right.
while you're developing, those things are, they're scaffolding, not necessarily crutches, but they're scaffolding to get up and running as a autonomous creature.
Yeah, absolutely. Lost my train of thought.
That's fine.
I
I did
had
that
something to
earlier.
say.
When you're describing like you studying women so hard, just like really being into like what is a woman, it reminded me of like when I was younger and I was really obsessed with women, but I was obsessed with women out of like I didn't want to be them. I just wanted them so much. They're so beautiful. It's like, ah, what makes you so beautiful to me? And my whole self would go out, toward women, and then I'm like, so my obsession was had a component of desire, and you were expressing this obsession that was more it was more possessive or more like kind of like Darwinian. Like, I want to pull you apart and understand how you work, kind of
Yes.
thing.
That goes along with earlier on in my life when I went on my mission for the Mormon Church. It was 2 years that I was serving with these other men, and this was the first time I was ever really around other boys that were my age. And a pretty girl would walk down the street, and they would check her out like she was something to be sexually into. And at the time, I couldn't comprehend that. That was not, I would look at her and I would look at her with a, like, I want to be her, not I want to be with her. And that always confused me. Why is this? Why? I mean, I know I feel like a girl inside, but why is it that these other guys I'm around, they have this attraction to females that I obviously didn't have. But what I realize now is it absolutely was an attraction. It was a masculine male attraction to females. But because I was raised the way I was in the Mormon church and raised to believe that sexual thoughts about someone you're not married to are so wrong, I internalized that as me wanting to be them. I took this sexual desire that I felt in my body that made me naturally as a man want to be with them, and it converted into that I wanted to be them because I couldn't be with them because that was inappropriate and that would lose me love and affection from my mother and my church and get me outcast. And so it evolved to where this natural attraction to females that all men are born with, it converted into an obsession that I needed to be one. And that was one of the weirdest things for me to realize here recently, because now that I'm back to living as a man and identifying as a man, these sexual feelings that come up in me towards females, it feels normal now to me. I'm like, this is just normal. This isn't something to be ashamed of. It's not something to push down. I mean, you don't act on the urges all the time. That would make you a monster. And I have a beautiful, amazing wife that I can have relations with. But yeah, it's the weirdest. It was the weirdest thing for me to experience.
Had you been married before your current wife in the Mormon church? Was there a lot of pressure? I assume there's a lot of pressure to get married as soon as you do your mission trip or something like that, right?
There is basically, as soon as you come home from your mission, you're expected to maybe go to
Land.
college and then, yeah, get married. The saying was, if you're 25 years old and still single, you are a menace to society. And that's what I grew up with, this constant expectation. You must get married. You must get married. And so, and I wanted to, I thought that getting married perhaps would get rid of these feelings I was dealing with. And so I was living up in Oregon before I moved to Colorado, and I met another Mormon girl, although she wasn't active. I found her on an LDS singles website and we started dating. And within 3 months, I proposed to her, as is typical in the Mormon faith, very fast paced, you get married. But she had her own traumas and things. And the reason she broke up with me is because of my mother, actually. My mother was constantly texting me, constantly in my life. And one time, my girlfriend or my fiance said she wanted to get a pit bull. And my mom always hated pit bulls. And in that moment, my mom's not going to like that if we get a pit bull. And she all of a sudden got quiet and pulled back. And next thing I know, a couple of weeks later, she broke up with me and said, I can't be with someone who's going to be controlled by their mom like this. And at the time, I was super hurt. I was devastated. But looking back, good for her. Good for her for not wanting to put up with that, because who does? But yeah, I was with her for 3 months and then she broke up with me, totally devastated me. And then shortly after that, I started talking to my current wife on Facebook. We just started talking, and next thing I know, I was coming out here to visit her all the time, and then I moved out here to be with her. And yeah, we absolutely love each other to death. And that's why when I came out to her, it was only a year into our relationship that I told her. We were actually watching that Gender Revolution documentary with Katie Couric. It was a National Geographic, and it had Jazz Jennings on it and this other older couple that had transitioned together. It was a fairly, really good made documentary that we watched together. And after we watched it, my wife knew at the time that I liked to wear women's clothes. She knew that I at home, she would even buy me skirts to wear because she was supportive of me dressing in women's clothing at home. But she didn't know that I actually wanted to be a woman full time, even out in public. And so after we watched that documentary, it struck something in her mind, I guess. And she turned to me and asked, "Is that what you want? Do you want to start female hormones and actually be a woman?" And I said, "Actually, yes, that is absolutely what I want." And as you can imagine, that of course rocked her world in that moment to be told that this man that she fell in love with and loves for the man I was, all of a sudden is telling her that this isn't going to be your future. You're going to be with a woman now. And she took that pretty hard, but amazingly, she I don't know how she did it, how she pushed through and handled it and just loved me all the way right through having the surgery. She was right there by my side supporting me. She knew that it was so important to me, even though she knew what it was taking away from her, taking something so precious from her. But she's such an amazing, supportive person that she just went along with it.
Wow.
And now looking back, she struggles with a lot of grief, knowing that she knew there was a part of her that knew I never should have done it. And so I think she kind of maybe kicks herself for not maybe doing more to try to convince me not to have the surgery. But I was in a place that I was ready to kill myself. I was ready to either have the surgery or end my life. I did not want to live another day with that penis on my body because it was something I despised so bad.
Yeah. What about when you left the church? Did you also leave the force field of your mother?
No, she continued to be in my life when I left the church, she kind of disowned me in certain ways, but she continued to send me regular messages and would send me articles from the church trying to. In the Mormon church, there's this film called The Prodigal Son, and it's about this Mormon boy that grows up and he starts drinking alcohol and smoking, and he leaves the church. And his parents are all devastated, and they pray for God to bring him back. And then towards the end of the movie, he comes back to the church, and they all welcome him back. And that movie has played such a part in my psychology, recognizing that my mom knows that movie as well and is expecting that someday I'm going to come back into the fold. I'm going to come back to the church. And that's never going to happen, but I feel for her in holding on to that hope. Now, last year, exactly 1 year ago from now, my mother was reached out again to me, sent me this big long message shaming me for leaving the church, shaming me for being trans and all this stuff. And I blocked her. I blocked her for months because I just couldn't handle having her. I'm 43 years old now, and I was having my mother constantly influencing my life, and I'd get one of these messages from her that would cause me to question myself, question whether I'm a good person, and then I would shut down, and my wife would notice I pull away from her and shut down in those moments, and now the most recent communication from my mother was this big long email message asking me what my intentions were with my book, because she immediately bought the book I wrote and started reading it. And of course, naturally, it's a book about my life. So it talks a lot about the traumas that I lived under in my household, in my family home, and the traumas my mother instilled in me. And so she does not like the book at all. And she's right now threatening to sue me to stop me from producing it. I don't.
You did what she wanted to do to you. She wanted to castrate you. She wanted to emasculate you. She wanted to dominate you. She wanted you to loathe that. She loathed that, and you fulfilled that
Wow.
destiny. And the person who gave you your body, put you on that path.
That gives me chills. That's
I'm sorry to
yeah.
be so direct.
I appreciate it.
But conversely, your job as a man in a relationship is to fulfill certain things for your wife and for any offspring that you're in charge of. And
Right.
what is your relationship to that? Like, to actually not just the symbolic and like the actual the genitals, like the physical aspect of being a man, but like performing that which your wife needs you to do, which isn't just opening jars and reaching to the top shelf, which they need, and we're thankful that we're needed in such simple ways, but to be the counselor, to be the strength, to be the to s help her with the burdens that she has. How was that affected by the transition, and how was that healed by the detransition?
I'm glad you brought that up because that's a big topic I wanted to talk about. Because when I transitioned the first time, obviously relationships work on a polarity, a masculine feminine polarity, whether you're same sex or not. In order for a relationship to genuinely thrive, there needs to be masculine feminine polarity. But in my marriage, when I transitioned, all of a sudden there's two feminines. And my wife ended up, because she's such an amazing supportive person, she just naturally took on the masculine roles in our relationship. Where I, because I wanted to identify so strongly with being female, with being a woman, I rejected any masculine role in my relationship. I all of a sudden, there's a part of me that still liked to be a provider, and I still worked my job and provide financially. But as far as showing up in my relationship as a man, the way a man should, even down to little things like supporting her and her femininity in being there for her, I couldn't be because now I was identifying as a woman myself. And so, one thing that a real struggle that happened in our marriage was this whole thing of her taking on the masculine role. And when I detransitioned, it almost rocked her world worse than it did the first time when I came out to her as trans, because now she had established herself as the masculine role in our relationship. And now all of a sudden I'm telling her, wait, I'm going to be a man again. And then she finds herself in a position to now having to realign her femininity. And so we've been going through for the past 6 months since October, since I came out to her again and detransitioned, we've been having to relearn what it means to be a man and a woman in the relationship and how to reestablish that masculine feminine polarity. And so that's one of the things that we are now incorporating in our work with other couples, because we've gone through this whole tornado of masculine feminine roles in a relationship. Had it totally destabilized and totally turned on its head to now be back to the way things naturally are with the male and a female in a relationship. It's been quite the struggle to reorient to what it means. How do I show up as a man now?
Is that having that pressure, has that facilitated your detransition, your psychological detransition, where you start to say, okay, I get to adore her. Okay, I get to use a deeper voice to say what she wants me to say, and then tease her when it's the proper time for me to tease her in the proper way. I don't know, however you express those dynamics, but do you find that you're being invited back into that role, and had you missed being able to do those things? And
Yeah, it's been fascinating because even though I lived as a man for most of my life, I felt like I was a woman inside. So literally for the first time in my 43 years of life, I'm getting to experience what it's like to be a man. I'm getting to show up in my marriage in that way and to be that man for her, and seeing how she responds to it, that she loves it. That's what she wants. That's what the feminine wants, is their strong man to show up in the relationship and to be their safe secure person that's not going to go off the rails at every emotional destabilization. And yeah.
Do you think that you pulled off putting your feminine back into place? Do you see the what you were trying to do and what you were doing poorly, or just you weren't doing actually or pretending to do, like just in how you processed the world and how you moved through the world?
When I was living as female,
Yeah. I
or
mean, now looking back and living as a trans woman, like what were you
yeah,
trying to do? And did you achieve it? Did you achieve what you were trying to achieve?
I really felt like I did. I think ideally, I feel like most trans people, ideally, achieving what they want to achieve would mean fully being female. Like if we were to somehow be able to take some pill that would literally biologically change my body to be female, that was what I really wanted. I didn't want to be a trans woman. I wanted to be a woman in every way, shape, and form. And so as far as what was available to me, the surgeries and hormones and things, I did feel like I reached my goal. I reached what was achievable in this life. I could live as a woman. I went to women's circles, used the women's restroom all day, every day. And I, when I, like I said, when I'd look at myself in the mirror, I was happy with the way I looked, felt like I was doing it. I was living life as a woman out in the world, and my relationship was good. And it, yeah, I was content. That's why it was such a crazy thing to all of a sudden have that flip when I like working with IFS and other healing modalities, when it suddenly flipped on my head and I found myself back to identifying as being a man. I said, this is really something. If you can go from being fully convinced in every way, shape, and form that this is the right thing for you to do, so much that you have permanent surgery to your body that can never be undone, and then to suddenly have your perspective shift in such a drastic way that now I'm like, oh, I'm a man. It's fine that I'm a man. I always was a man, and there's nothing wrong with that. I found that the majority of people's struggles is rooted in self-hatred. Trans people, the only reason you want to become something different than what you were born as is because you hate a part of yourself. And I surely hated large parts of myself. I could not accept myself. And now I can just love myself the way I am. I have my regrets. I have my grief for having gone through what I went through, but I recognize it was a tragedy. It was, I like to think about what happened to my penis as a catastrophic accident. Something terrible happened. An industrial accident caused my penis to be severed, and that's what
Well,
I have to
medical
live with now.
industrial complex accident.
Yes, exactly. One that I signed a paper giving them permission to do willingly.
What do you think about that? What do you think about the culpability, not necessarily for you, but just in large part of the gender industrial complex? What do you think about that right now?
I think it's horrifically tragic. I think that, like I said, that the I had to go see a psychologist. I'm a Kaiser customer. I go through Kaiser insurance, and it was Kaiser that sent me to this psychologist in order to have the surgery. And I show up there in the office, and the person sitting behind the desk is a trans woman herself. And I sat down, and my mind started going
Imagine the
in.
odds.
Yeah. I in that moment, I thought, this kind of doesn't seem right to me. But because I want that letter and I'm willing to do anything for that letter, I was ecstatic. I was like, here is a trans person that has no reason not to write me that letter. Literally, if they were to deny me that letter, that would mean them denying something about themselves. And they can't do that. They want to
And
be
you
affirmed in
recognize
their
that
identity.
there's, yeah, you recognize that you're participating and being in affirmation
Yes,
therapy. You're affirming
absolutely.
the therapist in this transaction.
Yep. And I recognized that then, and I
Wow.
especially recognize that now.
Yeah.
And I questioned it, but at the same time, like I said, it's what I wanted. It was the path I was pursuing, and that was an obstacle I had to overcome. And luckily, it wasn't an obstacle at all because the gatekeeper was one of me. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you're the adult in the room. What was the when did you start writing the book, and when did you start disentangling your trans identity?
That's another funny thing because I started writing the book about 4 years ago when I was still fully in my trans identity. And initially, the book was the story of my life and how I lived as a trans woman and being in the Mormon church. And then I was still in the process of writing the book in October of this last year when I had this realization. And all of a sudden, I thought, well, crap, this totally changes the whole book. The entire book has to be changed now. And I immediately went to work rewriting large sections of it to properly convey what I want to convey now. And
Wow.
that is that being trans is not something you're born with. And that's basically what my whole book lays out, is that everybody has their own experience. I'm not wanting to speak for all trans people, but I do have enough of an understanding of trans identity and what causes it, what causes gender identity issues now, and that I feel like my book has a lot of ground to stand on as far as the reality of what causes a person to form their identity. And I know that it's going to get me a lot of hatred, especially because I titled the book Transgender. It is a belief and it can change. Because I honestly believe that now, having lived it, I wouldn't have believed it before. I honestly believe it was something a person is born with, that it happens in utero, that a gender identity happens when your fetus is still in your mother's womb. And that's what I profess to be the truth because I had to in order to make it okay that I was living the way I was. And I know that's the case with a lot of other trans people. In order to feel affirmed in their identity, they have to believe they were born that way. But I have very strong reason to believe that that is not the case. Intersex individuals, sure. If you're intersex, that's an actual biological condition of your body that is different. Transgender is in your mind. That is something, that is a belief that is developed through a sequence of experiences and events that a person goes through, and the perspectives that a person develops through those events. And that is truly what I believe now.
What was it like going off of the hormones and getting to experience man juice once again?
So what happened was I was taking the estrogen pills, and I started to have health issues come up. Like I lost a ton of muscle. My wrist got down to be so skinny, and so much of my muscle and bone was going away, and I didn't like that. So I started to think, well, maybe I need to add a little testosterone. I'll still live as a woman, but I need a little testosterone. So I found a place up in Fort Collins, Colorado that would do bioidentical hormones pellets. My wife actually found it for me, and they take these hormone pellets and they put them under your skin, like they're in my back. And so I had them put estrogen and a small amount of testosterone in me, and I think it's possible that this played into my detransition, because it was like the very next day after getting, or a couple days after getting the testosterone in my system and feeling that was when I had the awakening and the realization that what am I doing? I was born biologically male, yet for 6 years now, I've been putting female hormones into my body. I'm suffering physical problems from this, it doesn't make any sense. No matter what I identify with, it doesn't make sense to put female hormones in a male biological body. And so those testosterone pellets that I had put in me, once I started to feel that, my sex drive came back. I had no sex drive for years. It went completely away. And all of a sudden that started coming back. And all of a sudden this realization that it just doesn't make sense to put female hormones in a biological male body, regardless of how I identify. And then I said, I have to go back to living as a man. It just doesn't make sense anymore. It literally makes no sense. I was born a boy. The only reason I don't want to be a boy is because I was told boys wouldn't be loved. So I clearly a man. There's no reason I can't go back to living as a man and taking the right hormones. So now I get just testosterone. And because I have no testicles anymore, I don't produce my own testosterone. So now I have to, and that's another thing for the rest of my life that I have to live with, being supplemented with something my body should be making normally.
What is it? Well, you're obviously, well, you said you have a complex mind. It's obvious that you have a certain amount of intelligence, that you're a smart guy, that you see things, that you're cognizant and you're aware. You're not dumb. I'm saying you're not dumb. What is it to be not dumb and to be completely hoodwinked by yourself and then like, and then just kind of turn the corner, like, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, what is your relationship to that, the absurdity of that? And then possibly because the whole problem stems from self-hatred, forgiving yourself, not even using that as another reason to hate yourself. Like, what, how's that been, that transition?
That one has been a little difficult for me and has caused a lot more, well, not a lot, but moments of self-hatred again as I sit there and look at myself and realize, how did I let myself go through that? Because I'm not a dumb individual. I mean, I achieved my commercial helicopter pilot's license when I was in my 20s, and I'm not necessarily
Competent.
the most smart person in the world, but I have a lot of intelligence. So the fact that I could allow myself to be so, like you said, hoodwinked by the whole situation and by myself. But again, the Mormon Church plays into that. The fact that I could believe so strongly in the Mormon Church and have it be everything, and then this, to believe so strongly that I was supposed to be female and to grab onto that. I see this happen a lot with these young people that are growing up with normal teenage issues. Normal, most teenagers don't like themselves. But the problem is, we have this whole trans ideology out there that is so prominent in their environments now that when they experience these feelings of self-hatred, and then there's something to grasp onto, oh, there's an answer for me. I can be the opposite sex, and that'll fix everything. I'll be happy then because that's what my problems are. And no matter in how intelligent of a person you are, when it's tied into your identity, it becomes something that, well, I guess there's an answer for me. I can be happy if I do this thing,
It's
even
a
though it doesn't make
gobbler.
logical sense.
It's a spiritual gobbler. It just gobbles up people's lives.
Yes. It does. It's, and like you said, with the checklist of being trans. Now you've got to do this. Now you've got to have this surgery. Now you've got to act this way. And it's all consuming.
I think that the answer converges, but I want to do a loaded question to see if you land where I live. But maybe not. So you were describing your wife going through these different orientations, in the relationship, going from this to that and then back to this and these wild swings. This would destroy any but the truest relationship, let's say. That relationship has to have something higher than itself, higher than those two people. What is that thing? What is that thing that allows you and your wife to be together still and to go through these processes alone and together from your two different perspectives and share in this? What is that higher thing that has allowed you to survive this together?
I think for one, we see a very clear mission together. We see that we have a relationship that was cultivated in certain traumas. This whole thing that we've gone through, me leaving the Mormon church and me changing gender roles and us changing gender roles in our relationship and everything, it caused us to build our relationship on such a foundation that we see a huge potential. We have a mutual interest in helping others, and we've led retreats, psilocybin mushroom retreats, where we guide people through medicine journeys and stuff, because we have this mutual passion for helping other people to find their true essence, to find their happiness and confidence in life. And it's almost like our love now is built upon this mutual desire to take our relationship and use it as a tool to help others. I guess when you go through your own journey of struggle and falling in the pits of despair over and over again, and then you see others doing that, and you see that you potentially have a ladder, a guiding light for others. And so we love each other very much. Our relationship is just so strong. Other people see us together, and they just want so badly what we have, and we desire to help people to learn the things that we've learned through our relationship to achieve what we've achieved, I guess. So I don't know if that answers your question at all.
So what's next for you then?
Well, now fully embracing what it is to be a man. Like I said, I've only been a man for the past 6 months now, and so it's still kind of new for me. I'm next week actually going down to Arizona to a men's rite of passage retreat, because it's with Richard Rohr, Father Richard Rohr. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but I recognize this need to reestablish what it means to be a man, to be around other men that are good men, good examples for me, that role models that I can figure out how to live life as a man again. I mean, I lived the first 34 years of my life basically as a man, running my trucking business and everything, but at the same time, the mindset was so off. But now, for the first time in my life, here I am as this confident man that I want to go forward in life and teach. I want my story to help countless people. I don't want to have to see others who went through what I went through and now have serious regrets and grief, because a few weeks ago, I went through some of the worst grief ever. When I first detransitioned, I wasn't feeling the grief. I was like, okay, I lost my penis, but I guess this is where I am. But it eventually hit me. The grief all of a sudden came on me, and I had a lot of suicidality, because now I'm like, what? How do I live in this world? I don't have a penis anymore. I can't show up as a man. Even if I can figure out how to live as a man, I don't have the physical parts to feel confident that I'm a man. And so I say I now experience reverse gender dysphoria, which is far worse than the original gender dysphoria. Original gender dysphoria, I could blame it on God. I could say God made a mistake, or my body had a defect. I was born a female in male's body. But now what I'm dealing with is knowing that it was my own fault. It was my own choice. Although, do any of us actually make choices for ourselves when you really think about it? Because we're all a product of our past experiences. So I try not to beat myself up over the choice I made, but the grief I experience now, knowing that it was my choice, is severe, and I don't ever want to see anybody else have to live with that.
It's a crucible, and without that, without taking responsibility, you can't regain your agency back from it.
Right.
That's the problem, you know. You have to accept responsibility. Insofar as you can accept responsibility, you can actually go through the process of forgiving yourself and then going forward in life and doing as you need to do, in the certainty that you're doing it, knowing that it's you. And
Yes.
that's the only way to do it, is guilt and shame aren't ends in themselves. They're there to renovate us into, you know, adults, into men and women.
Right. Right. And yeah, I'm a firm believer that every experience, no matter how tragic it is, that there are lessons in it, there are blessings in it. Even this, there are tremendous blessings from this whole thing, even though there's a lot of reason to have grief and regret. I learned a lot about myself, learned a lot about the world, and yeah, how to be there for others, because now I know going through something where you are so completely in the delusion, because that's what I recognize it as now, that it was an absolute delusion, and I was so much in the delusion, there was no possible way to see out of it. I was just in my little box. Anybody that tried to knock on my box, I'd scream at them to get away. Don't you dare try to convince me that what I'm doing is wrong. My parents, obviously, they tried when they found out I was having the surgery. They tried their hardest to convince me not to. Please don't do that. That's tragic. But I was so convinced.
So are you full circle then? So you have a story to tell. How are you telling it? How can people connect with you and hear about your life?
Yes. I have my YouTube channel. I think my YouTube channel handle is The Larell, like THELARELL. And I also have LarellHerbert.com and on Instagram.com/LarellH. And my book that I wrote, Transgender, It Is a Belief and It Can Change, that's on Amazon. I self-published that. It's a 472-page book.
Oh wow, okay, you jammed it
It's a good size.
right full.
Yes, because I shared a lot of the dynamics of my childhood experiences I went through that programmed into me these weird gender identities, the beliefs that being a woman was superior. And I, in my book, I talk a lot about the childhood experiences that I went through that formed my belief in myself. Like one of the primary examples I give is my mother, for some reason, when I was young, felt the need to explain to me the proper way of checking your fingernails. She said, a man looks at his fingernails like this, a woman looks at her fingernails like this. And that stuck in me so strong because she told me that when I was like six or so. And I don't know why she felt the need to tell me that, but it was such a profound brick laid in the formation of my mind that I, for the rest of my life, I would find myself, oh, I better be careful about how I look at my fingernails because I might give myself away as being feminine or. But yeah,
Is
my
there
focus.
like, is there something that you're headed towards that you have a name for? You used to have Mormonism, gave you direction. Then you had transition or transgender or that trans identity get, kind of give you formation. Is there something there now, or are you without that?
I like to think I have grasped onto spirituality now. And yeah, I don't necessarily feel the need to replace my trans identity with something else that I grasp onto. But I guess we as humans always feel the need to establish some sort of safety. Like my wife and I were traveling on the road for a while, and then after a while we realized this just feels so constantly destabilizing. There's no security, there's no base. And so when we came back to Colorado, we found we just thrive better when we have safety and security. And I think we all work that way. And I, with our identities, we want something solid to stand on, whether it's religion or a trans community. And I like to think that my wife and I are have enough of a community, like I said earlier, that we don't necessarily need to go find a new church to grasp onto or.
Wow. Laurel, thank you so much for accepting my invitation and being so open with such profoundly personal thoughts and experiences. I
Yeah.
believe it was somebody came onto my channel and kind of tagged you and said that this guy's talking. He sounds like a guy to listen to.
Yeah,
So
I'm doing an interview next week with Buck Angel. Because yeah, I want my story to be heard. Every one of us is unique, and while my story differs from other trans individuals, there are a lot of similarities. And I like to believe that there is someone out there that fully identifies as trans right now who is maybe even scheduled for surgery, and they're all excited about it. But I want my words to speak to their heart and cause them to maybe think, what if this does change? What if after the surgery, even if it's 10 years from now, what if I find myself wishing I hadn't done it? And I want so bad for my story to speak to the hearts of those who are potentially in that situation and position, that I may help them to avoid making such a tragic mistake, because it is a tragic mistake. If a person identifies as trans for the rest of their life, then clearly it would end up not being a mistake. They'd die believing it was the right choice. But then the question is, if they were biologically created one gender to begin with, who's to say that it's the right thing to change that? Everyone's on their own path. If a person genuinely wants to live as a gender separate than what they are, like it's my understanding that Buck Angel, for example, knows he's a woman but lives as a man, whereas generally trans people like myself know we're a woman, even though we're not. And so, yeah, I just want my story to somehow resonate with people.
Well, I'm sure it's going to find the ears that are ready to hear it. And also a bunch of people who just turned into my channel, and I think they're going to really enjoy this time because you're a really genuine human being. So I'm
Appreciate
honored to have this time with you.
it. Yeah, same. I was very happy when you reached out, because I have been looking forward to opportunities like this to share my story in this way.
Well, excellent. I'm going to end the recording.
Okay.
And step. And,